Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Scoop. Today, it's a little bit of a simplified scoop, as I only have stories from CICK News right here in Smithers and CKTZ Cortes Island. The rest of the journalists in the LJI Scoop program are taking some much-needed time off during an editorial break. Out of Cortes, fiber optic cables were exposed to the public eye and severed in at least 17 locations on Whaletown Road. City West, the Strathcona Regional District, and its subcontractor, WCI, faced a roadblock on Cortes Island on March 21st, discovering an estimated $40,000 worth of damage to not-yet-completed fiber optic infrastructure. CKTZ's Lonnie Taylor has that scoop.
Jason Bryan is the foreman for WCI, which is a subcontractor of City West. City West is being contracted to lay fiber optic cable in rural areas as part of a program called the Connected Coast. Managed and implemented by City West and the Strathcona Regional District, the SRD. Jason Bryan chatted with CKTZ to update us on how the act of mischief has affected the crew.
What is your position with City West?
So I'm the foreman with the subcontractor of WCI.
Okay, so that means you're overseeing a lot of the operations then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I take responsibility for the finished grade as well when we're all finished up. But in my off time from doing that, I am organizing the drill shots and the drops getting to the homes, any other logistical areas that I can be in, like with shipping or maintenance on machines and stuff like that.
Okay, so you're doing a lot. How long have you been on Cortes now on this fiber optic project?
So WCI this time around showed up about December 1st is when we started getting going. And we've been pretty hard on the ground since December 1st.
Okay, and on March 21st, City West reached out to the RCMP to report 17 places the cables were cut on Whaletown Road. Were you a part of the City West team that discovered this damage?
Yeah, that's correct. So on the 21st, right when we were actually finished our build, basically, we got to Thunder Road. That's where we're ending this part of the build. We've pretty much done our day, and a fella came up to us and showed us a picture showing us where the lines were cut, and that was right at the entrance, right across the street from Bonington Road. And yes, I was part of that group that did the initial investigation. So I then went out and it showed from Hunt Road at the first vault that we have installed at the top of Hunt Road to 765 Whaletown Road. That's roughly about a kilometer and a half at 17 different locations.
And you sent me a lot of pictures. I'm assuming you probably actually showed me almost all 17 severed lines. Someone actually reported this to you.
Yeah, that's right.
And in your knowledge and experience on Cortes and with City West, have you had any impression that there was major opposition to this operation, to the installation of fiber optic on Cortes Island?
No, definitely not. We experienced a slight pushback of just some of the older school mentality kind of folk. They just want to be left alone on their beautiful little island. And we do understand that position for sure. But no, we've never encountered anything like this, nor would we have any indication that something like this would ever come up.
In regards to the actual report from the RCMP, the report says the complainant advised the cables were cut in such a way that someone would need to have knowledge of where to cut to make them inoperable. Looking at the photographs that you sent me of all the damage, I've seen these lines wound up in rolls all over the road, and you're describing 17 cuts over a kilometer and a half of space. Could someone have just taken a cutting apparatus and basically cut everything they saw that was like visible to the road? Is that kind of how it appeared? Or was it more selective than that in the form that the complainant thinks that they had to have special knowledge in order to make this kind of damage?
Yeah. To that point, actually, you are somewhat right, where you do see them coiled up on the road and they're very accessible. The reason why we think that it may be someone with some knowledge of our network is that one group of these wires were cut. There's one photo I sent you, and I think there's probably four lines that were cut right in half. Now, if you were to walk 10 feet up from there, the individual drop that's going to the client's home was not cut. 10 feet up from that area, again, another individual drop going to another client's home was not cut. Them cutting them in the group indicates to us that they do know where to cut to make the most amount of damage. And now continuing past that area, they continue to cut lines in different sections. But it's just funny that they left those two individual ones. And it seems like that throughout all 17 cuts. This could be a total coincidence as well. It could have just been simply random cutting. Maybe someone maybe come out of a driveway at a certain time when they were in that section. So again, we're not pointing fingers at any individuals on Cortez, and we would really hate to even think that someone that used to work with us or that has knowledge of our network would do that.
The report also says the damage to the cables is an estimated $40,000. And you're indicating that things were selectively done in a way to really cause maximum damage. What does the damage mean for Cortez Island as far as what is inoperable? Is it everything in Whale Town? Is it everything on Whale Town Road? What is the diagnosis of this damage?
So then as far as what it means for the residents on Cortez, it's a slight interruption to your service. They're projecting it to be an additional month now. I believe we will get this done a lot quicker than what the projection time is, but that is what they are giving us. It roughly equates to about 1/3 of the residents in Whale Town on this build here.
Okay. And just to clarify, is any portion of the fiber optic network up and running and serving Cortez Island residents?
There are some test clients that are hooked up. The mapping of that, I'm unsure of. I know right now that the part of the build that we were working on in the very beginning, which is from Yakka Way up to Sawmill and Olmsted and all that, they all now have fiber running to their places. They're just not hooked up yet, but they do have all the fiber in the ground and everything.
Okay. And what is the projected time that City West is now estimating that the whole service will be up and running on Cortez?
Well, they're estimating that the service will be up and running fully by midsummer to late summer. Originally, we had a projected date of spring to midsummer kind of thing. So now this has just pushed us back a little bit, but shouldn't be too far off.
Okay, so previous to this damage, the estimated time of completing the project in full on Cortez Island was spring to midsummer. But because of the damage, now the projected time of fully finishing the project is midsummer to late summer. And you think that it was about a month worth of damage that you'll have to go back and redo?
That's correct. Yeah, we were scheduled to be out of here by April 1st, and now it may look like it's going to be closer to the end of April. That is for the backbone of the civil team to be completed here.
Is there anything else that you want to share about this incident, like how it made you feel? You said this hasn't happened anywhere else for City West or for you. So yeah, like what was your personal reaction to this scenario?
Initially heartbroken, to be quite honest. We have put in an extreme amount of effort and hard work to get this project done for you folks over here and for us. Our company has actually broken records over here on this part of the build. We're just completely surpassing any expectations the company had for us. There's no deficiencies left behind. When we leave, the roads are going to be better than what we found them. Put that much hard work in, and then to have that happen definitely is a little bit of a gut punch, and also just an area for us to think about what we could do better. Future. Maybe we don't have those lines exposed for so long, giving people opportunity to do something bad. But yeah, just we felt a little defeated, but at the same time, we're just persevering and ready to keep going.
And have you gotten any feedback from the community since this occurred?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, just today I was told about several residents stopping by and just telling us that they're sorry for what's happened and that it's a shame that somebody over here had done something like that. So we're definitely getting feedback, great feedback from the community and lots of support that way for sure.
The project will cost an estimated $45.4 million to provide 159 landing sites along Haida Gwaii, Prince Rupert, south to Vancouver and around Vancouver Island. The SRD will receive $32.5 million of the funds, and City West will receive $12.9 million to construct the required high-speed infrastructure along BC coast. Funding for the project is provided by the Government of Canada's Connect to Innovate, CTI program, as well as Indigenous Services Canada, and the province of BC through the Connecting British Columbia program administered by the Northern Development Initiative Trust. To find out more about the Connected Coast, go to connectedcoast.ca.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
And from CICK News in Smithers, Dan Messick has an update on the City of Prince Rupert's $77 million that they received from the federal government for Disaster Mitigation and Adaptation Fund to replace their entire water and sewer infrastructure. Here's Dan Messick with that scoop.
Today on CICK News, Prince Rupert has finally got the word that the city of 12,000 can begin the arduous task of replacing their entire water and sewer infrastructure after they received more than $77 million from the federal government's Disaster Mitigation and Adaptation Fund. Those funds are on top of $65 million from the province and another $45 million in city borrowing to make up the more than $200 million project that will see more than 26 kilometers of pipes replaced over the next 3 to 5 years. On Thursday night, Prince Rupert will host an open house at the Lester Center for the Arts to discuss the disruption residents can expect and what they'll have to deal with during construction, but also what the community can expect to see once the water woes of the past are gone forever, but it won't be an easy road. Earlier this year, Prince Rupert was also at the forefront of another funding announcement after the province earmarked $250 million for the Northwest Resource Benefit Alliance, which could also help Prince Rupert shore up infrastructure needs. I spoke with Prince Rupert Mayor Herb Pond on the heels of that announcement and what is in store for Prince Rupert in 2024, as well as what it will take to replace the 100-year-old pipes. Stay with us.
I'm Herb Pond, and I'm the mayor of Prince Rupert.
Great, Herb. Thanks so much for being with us again here on CICK News. Of course, a pretty amazing announcement came last week, $250 million over the next 5 years to the Northwest BC Resource Benefit Alliance. This is a project that has been 10 years in the making, and this is the first real substantial financial commitment from the provincial government. Maybe walk me through kind of your visit with the other mayors from the region down to Victoria last week, and what did you hear?
Yeah, so as you know, there are three of us that are the co-chairs for the much larger organization. We each have been appointed by our respective regional district to carry this ball forward. And we knew, we'd had meetings over the last year and a half. Of course, people have been, as you said, working on this for 10 years. I happen to have the pleasure of being one of the people that got to carry the ball over the line, but there's been a ton of work done on this over years. And we had lots of signs and signals that we were getting close. And at the same time, there's always debate within government, as there should be, as to each funding request and how it gets handled. And we wanted to make sure that people didn't forget us or forget the Northwest. And so probably a month ago, we let the premier and others know that we would be coming down to be there for the throne speech. to be there for the throne speech and then also for budget day. And what we were telling them was we wanted to be there to celebrate the good news because we were confident that they would be including this in this upcoming budget. And so that's why we were there. We had some meetings and then there were some follow-up meetings with staff from our staff. So just a really good, productive push to get it over the finish line. I can't say enough about the efforts from my MLA, Jen Rice, but also all three of the MLAs supported it. But Nathan Cullen was instrumental as well. Big day.
Yeah, no doubt. Herb, we've talked about these infrastructure needs in Prince Rupert several times now. Of course, this is going to be a big help, but it's $250 million over the next 5 years. That's about $50 million a year. And there's 21 communities and regional districts that are part of this alliance, from all the way from Massett to Vanderhoof. Now, how is this money going to be divvied up? Does everyone get the same slice of the pie, or are communities going to have to apply for an amount of money for a particular project? How is this all gonna work, and when could these communities start seeing some of this money? Because I know, and of course you know, and Rupert, the infrastructure needs are critical at the moment.
Yeah, there's work to be done still on the allocation. There's work that has been done on the allocation. And government has the province has some strong ideas, and so there's some work to be done within the coalition, within the alliance, to come up with formulas that work for everybody, from the smallest municipalities and the electoral areas and within the regional district. So that's still a bit of a blank. However. There are several pieces to this that really matter. One is both government and ourselves are really eager to see the money distributed out. And so this isn't going to be a long, drawn-out process. Secondly, regardless of the allocation, as you say, $50 million a year divided a lot of different ways might sound like a smaller number. But the significance is it's a multi-year deal. That's the magic, and so that's how the fair share in the piece began. It was I don't want to call it a modest beginning, but it was a modest beginning compared to what it is today. And so in executing a five-year agreement, we can plan. We don't have to guess next year what kind of funding we might be receiving from the province. And then we can use that money for matching money in other grants and other applications. That's the game changer. The money itself is important, but it's that ongoing predictable piece that hopefully it gets renegotiated many times over, and 50 years from now people are still benefiting from this day, this arrangement.
Yeah, no doubt. Just the last thing for you, Mayor Pont. Of course, this has been about 10 years in the making. It sounds like it had support from both sides of the aisle, both parties, major parties in the province. Of course, we're in an election year, so we'll see a provincial election later in the fall of this year. What's your hope going forward, seeing this initial $250 million over the next 5 years? But where does it go from here? What could come next is what I'm really curious about. So where do you see the alliance going from here?
Well, it's early days, but I think so. First of all, we have to get the allocation formula and sign an agreement with the province that works for everybody. But there's been early discussions that say there's a momentum that's been built by us coming together. And are there opportunities for the communities within the RBA region to find other ways that we might work together? Here's one small example is if all of a sudden we're all going to do some road paving, maybe it works better if we don't bid against each other for the limited resources that are available. Maybe if we work together, we can put together a plan that allows each community to get the paving done a little more cost effectively. Don't know if that can happen or not, but there's the kind of thing that because we've begun to work together on this alliance, there's, I think, other opportunities going forward.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.